This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
I've told this story many times on the air, and I've told it many times as I speak around the country. When we launched Sports Byline USA back in 1988, my very first night, first hour, first guest on Sports Byline was Willie Mays. He was gracious enough to come visit here on the show in the studios. And from that particular point, we launched Sports Byline USA, and it's nice to have him back with us again. Willie, good evening to you. How are you?
Hi, Ron. Pretty good.
Good. Willie, when you stop to think about what baseball has meant to you and what you have meant to baseball, what thoughts do you have in both those areas?
Well, first of all, I think I love baseball very much. When I played 150 games for about 16, 17 years in a row. And what I try to do for the fans when I play it is that I try to create things as I went along. By that, I mean every day I try to do something different. And I never wanted to do the same thing, you know, day in and day out. And I feel that when the fans come to the ballpark and pay their money, they must see some kind of show. And that's what I try to do, you know, mainly.
How were you able to maintain that creativity for such a long time? Because after someone does something for a period of time, I would think it would get mundane.
Well, I don't think that was a problem, playing 150 games every year. You're talking about playing games every year?
Right, and also being creative and being entertaining as you wanted to be.
Well, what about an actor when he plays in 80 or 90 movies? He's creative. He doesn't have the same role, mainly. I think I was in that same category. So it wasn't really hard to create things. It may not be in the outfield. It may not be at bat. It might be on the base. You never know. Or what you come up with. So what I try to do is just do something different somewhere in that area. If it was in the outfield, I would never catch fly ball the same way. I may catch it a basket catch, but something a little different.
Willie, you always had an enthusiasm for this game. What were the seeds of it? Take me back to the early beginnings of Willie Mays in baseball.
I can't take you that far back. I wish I could. I'd be playing now. I don't know. I never really look back on things like that because it's not really good for me to look back and try to figure out how did I get to this, this Hall of Fame type of thing. But, I love what I was doing. I love baseball, and I really appreciate baseball for getting me this far because even though I played the game. But you have to keep your body in really, really good condition to play 150 games a year, and that's what I did. Not just for the baseball season, but off season. I did more work off season than I did on season. On season, I would sleep a lot, and I never had no problem about getting hurt or anything like that. So, I think it was good for baseball was good for both of us.
And of course, when you came in 1951 back in New York with the New York Giants, that was almost like a golden age of baseball back then. You had three teams. You had the Yankees, you had the Dodgers, and you had the Giants. What was it like to be in New York with those three teams at that time?
Well, my first year was kind of scary because I came to New York when I was about 19, just turned 20. And coming from Birmingham, Alabama was very scary because New York, I had read about it, and I had played there for a couple of years with the Birmingham Black Barons, so coming back to New York, being a player and being a star in the outfield in New York, it was kind of scary. But we had three good teams at that particular in that area. There's never going to be a city, I think, that had three good teams like that: the Yankees, the Dodgers, and the Giants. And like Mickey and I, we would laugh all the time. As long as they keep talking, let them talk. And we threw Duke in a little bit. And we always told him that, hey, you just ride our coattail, we'll be fine with you. So we just had fun back in the 50s, and it was no jealousy between the guys that played in New York. It was just pure fun.
Also, if you take a look at the polo grounds at Ebbets Field, they had distinctions. They were distinctively different. Can you talk about, first of all, the polo grounds where you played? What made it so unique?
Well, the polo ground started with 250 down each line and went out to around 477 in the corners. That means the left field gaps and the right field gap. Straightaway center field was 580. There was a fence out there where I made a catch in 1954, and that was about 458, right on the corner of the wall there. What made it so hard is that they didn't have padding on the wall out there. Everything was brick. And I really never had a problem myself because I'm playing center field, but it was a big center field. But, again, you don't play the center field. You play the hitters. You take a guy like Richie Ashburn, I would play him right behind second base because he was such a good hitter. He hit most of the line drive, so I would catch all of them. But you have to play the outfield rather than just playing, you know, in the ballpark.
What about Ebbets Field then?
Ebbets Field was about, center field was 397. Right field was 299. Left center was 347. Down the line was 340. It was like a little bandbox. We had fun over there. I myself hit close around 12 home runs there a year. And we only played about, I think, six or seven games there.
You hit not only for power with the 660 home runs, Willie, but you also hit for average. So you were a very smart hitter as well. Talk to me a little bit about the Willie Mays hitting philosophy.
I didn't have one. You see the ball, you hit it. My key to hitting, I think, was knowing the pitches. I don't think I was the best hitter. I was among the best hitters, but I wasn't the best hitter. Stan Musial, I think Joe was a good hitter. Ted Williams was to me the best hitter that I played against. But Hank was in the league, too. They had also had Eddie Mathew. We had a lot of good hitters when I played. So it wasn't just myself hitting. It was just a matter of trying to put the ball in play all the time and hustling down to first base. I didn't have a philosophy of trying to hit. And I think, again, when you go up there trying to be too smart, I don't think you're going to hit. I think you just go up there and you hit what you just see. If you see a slider going the other way, you carry it to right. If he pitches inside, you carry it to left. And if he gets it down the middle, you just hit it straight away. So it wasn't anything different that I did from anybody else. It's just that I just hit what I seen. You know?
You mentioned about Musial. You mentioned about Hank Aaron and others like that and yourself. But there were also great pitchers during that period of time. Talk to me a little bit about the pitchers that you faced, the ones you respected, the ones that really truly challenged Willie Mays.
Well, they all did that. We had guys that would go nine innings when I played, Koufax, Drysdale, Bob Gibson. You don't talk too much about Robert Roberts, Kirk Simmons. They had a kid in Chicago named Bob Rush. You had Juan Spahn, you had Lou Burdette. On every club that we played, you had three good pitchers that would go nine innings. We didn't have a lot of relievers in the time I played. Maybe a couple of clubs would have a fairly good reliever, like Elroy Face was one of them. Chris Castagne was one with Philadelphia. Clem Levine was with the Dodgers. Joe Black was with the Dodgers. So it wasn't really a lot of them, you know, that came into relief because they never – was used that much because all the guys that won 20 games, they went nine innings just about every day, you know.
One of the things, Willie, that I see today, as you know, with Bob Gibson and others who pitched during that period of time and when you were playing, it was kind of a badge of honor, was it not, to finish a game and go into the ninth inning? Now we have so much specialization. Yeah. How has that changed the way the game's played?
Well, it's changed in the minor league. I think they have what they call a pitch count in the mound, and the guys, when they get here, they look for the same kind of pitch count, which is like six inning or seven inning. I think the key right now is the closers, the middle relievers. We didn't have all that when I played. And then, you know, when we played, nine innings wasn't nothing. You go that every day, you know. The game has changed compared to the, you know, with the relievers involved.
There's another aspect of the game, and talking to a fellow Hall of Famer, Joe Morgan, I said to him, what are you most proud of? He said, aside from the MVPs and the championships, he said, winning the gold gloves that I won. How important was it for you to be able to get gold gloves, for you to be able to be the complete baseball player?
Well, if you look at baseball, baseball starts with defense. If you can catch the ball, you're in the game just about every day. If you don't catch the ball out there, you're going to lose a lot of games. When I was about 15, my father used to teach me about how to win games and lose games. And you can't – and first of all, he didn't want me to get into fights and things like that because I couldn't do the club in the clubhouse. But I think the game today, any day, defense starts first. And then you work back into the offense because you got a lot of guys can hit. But a lot of guys can't feel. So with me, I want to make sure that I cut the ball every day, and defense was very, very important to me. When I played my first 4 or 5 years, we didn't have golden gloves, so I only have 12. So I didn't get too many. I think Brooke Robinson got the lot. I think he got 18. Yeah, so I didn't get it. I told him that. Just give me the other four. I should have my other four gloves at home somewhere.
Talk to me about your dad a little bit. How did he influence you baseball-wise?
Well, my dad was a very smart guy. He was a guy that would stay ahead of me this way. When I went to Birmingham Black Bands at the age of around 15, he had already called the guys and told them to take care of me, not let me go out by myself anyway, not to be around fast people. So he already had told them what to do. So when I got to New York, he had called a guy named Joe Walker, which was a barber there, to make sure that I got a good room, make sure that I ate right, I didn't, go out too much. So he was the type of guy that was very low-key. We never argued. He was like a friend to me. He was a guy that I could go to regardless of what it may be, and we talked.
Willie, if I could transport myself back to a particular time, I'd love to go back and be able to just watch the Negro Leagues. They were so special.
Yeah.
There were players that played with great heart, great emotion, and a love for the game. Mm-hmm. You were involved with them. Tell me what was so special about them.
Well, to me, now, I can only speak for myself because I was only there 2 years. They made me say, hey, you're going to go to the majors. That's just what they say every day. You're going to go to the majors. We may not go because when I was 15, those guys were 25, and they didn't have a lot of chances to go. They was only going to stay there. But they said to me when I first got there, we're going to make sure you go to the majors. That means you're not going to do anything wrong. You're going to do everything right. All you do is go out and play. I remember a couple of guys on the ball club didn't have suits. We all chipped in, got them a suit because we want to look good on the road. I remember a lot of families that couldn't eat that the guys was involved in. We chipped in. We got them food and everything. Nobody knew about all these things we did, but we did it with a very, very little amount of money.
Also, your love for the game, did it help you overcome or at least maybe look the other way about the injustices of society at that time in this country?
Well, that was prejudice during the time that I came up. We all knew that because there was two teams in Birmingham. They had the White Barons and the Black Barons there, but we all knew that. But you had to look the other way a little bit because if you didn't, you wouldn't progress along. And I think Jackie proved that the first 2 years that he came in the league. He couldn't say nothing, Holly. And I think he was a very, very smart guy, Jackie was, and to do that because it takes a lot of courage to say no. It takes a lot of courage to back up a little bit. It takes a lot of courage. I mean, when a man slap you, you're going to back up and you're not going to hit him? Oh, that's strong.
Also, do you believe that with Jackie and all the other early players that were African-Americans and black players that came into baseball, that their passion for the game and their desire to show that they could play this game was the thing that really fueled their intensity for playing the game, Willie?
I think when we came in the league, we changed the game. We changed the game from running to for throwing. At least I thought I did. I didn't think anybody could beat me doing anything when I came in the league. I was just a little cocky kid coming along, 20-year-old kid. I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to catch these kind of balls. They're talking about people couldn't catch. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to throw runners out like I did, hit home runs. I just didn't feel nobody could beat me doing anything. And that's the way I played when I came into high school, when I came with the Barons. I was just one of those kids that, when the ball went up, catch it and throw it and hit it. So I did all those things before I even came to the Giants. It's just the Giants was organized a little more, and everybody started reading the paper about what's going on. So I really didn't have a downside on me at any time.
How do you want fans to ultimately remember Willie Mays when the name comes up in 20, 30, or 40 years down the road?
Well, I like the fans to remember that there's a guy, when he went on the field, he was ready to play. If you look at me play day in and day out, I never played to dog the game. I never played to misuse the game. I never played to misuse the fans. I was always there for kids, and I'm still there for kids. But I feel that they should remember me as a guy that want to play baseball, want to love baseball, and when people talk about baseball in the wrong way, I would fight about it.
Willie, I want to thank you. You gave a lot on the field, but you also gave something to me as well as you helped launch Sports Byline USA, and I will be indebted to you forever. Thank you, my friend. Continued good health, and come back and visit with us again here on Sports Byline.
Okay, Ryan.
Only a handful of people have been special to this game. Willie Mays is one of those handful of people. We're back on the other side as we continue across the country and around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network and the Internet. We've got you on Sports Byline.